Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond here for the next snowy hour of broadcasting. Tom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Made in before the big blizzard.
Yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere.
Well, you know, it was above 10 degrees today, so we can't just have a nice day. Gotta be punished somehow.
Of course not. That would just be inappropriate.
You know, this is from the Star Tribune. It's been a hardy Minnesota winter, but no record setter. I'm going to read a little article here, a little short one that might put this in perspective.
All right.
The frigid air that has gripped much of Minnesota since early December is making this a winter for the history books. With the latest string of days, with readings below zero at 15 and counting Sunday, forecasters said the metro area only needs to record another handful of such days to claim a place on the list of 10 winters with the most days of sub-zero temperatures. How many days of school did you miss this year?
Well, I am proud to say I missed none. Thank you very much.
Well, there you go.
Even on our negative 25 in the morning day?
I still remember going to school in those days, but...
Oh, I know. Me too. I think I got, in my entire high school career, maybe one day off.
What's happened?
And I got to school to see the dean out in the parking lot telling people to go home. That was fantastic.
Anytime a dean's involved, you know it has to be good. The tally of consecutive sub-zero lows is likely to reach 17 before a slight warming trend begins Wednesday. That was this last Wednesday. Placing the Twin Cities at a total of 42 days below zero for the winter season. The record is 60 days below zero in the winter of 1874 to 1875. Recall that year?
I do.
The winter of 1936 set the record for consecutive sub-zero days at 36. It's been cold, but not at record levels, said Rick Hildebrand, a meteorologist for the Twin Cities Office of the National Weather Service. Since the first sub-zero day on December 7th, the metro has suffered a consistent pattern dominated by a stream of northerly air flow coming down from the Arctic, he said. It just doesn't end.
No, it's not going to.
And
it's here forever.
Do you ever wonder if you go online and listen to these radio stations from across the country, are they all discussing weather as much as we are?
I think in certain places, yes, but Minnesota, the Midwest in general, it's a normal topic of conversation that we love to talk about. In other parts of the country, you talk about the weather when you are completely uninterested in the other person and have nothing worthwhile to say.
When you go to Fort Myers, Florida, do they talk about the weather nonstop?
It's
warm and
it's
peaceful
hot.
And pleasant.
It's hot again.
Yep. More from this article here. We've racked up 3 inches more snow than usual since the first measurable snowfall on November 5th. It feels like it was August 5th. There doesn't appear much hope or fear of beating the record 98.6 inches of snow that fell in the winter of 1983. It's just a typical hardy winter, Hildebrand said. He noted that fellow forecasters who grew up here say it's a kind of winter they remember. Snowpack on the ground, no wimpy January rainfall, or a measly 2 feet of snow as dropped a few winters ago. And there have been some respectable blizzards, just like the one 2 weeks ago with 40-plus mile-an-hour winds that closed roads throughout much of the state. I thought that when you saw, as a kid, when you had these big snowbanks, it's just because you were 3 feet tall. That's why snow was so big. And looking at my sidewalk and walking up the sidewalk, and the snow was up at my neck level. And I'm a very tall person. I mean, I'm 6'5". But it's just miserable. And now today, we finally broke that string of that blistering cold, and now it's – it'll take us an hour to get back home.
Well, maybe it's just me, but I guess – over the last several years, we've had some pretty warm winters, and I don't remember growing up, maybe, again, it's just me, having your winters be above zero. I just remember zero or negative, and that's the way it was. And all, I think, last year when it was negative 15, negative 20, we were complaining about it. That sounded great to me back when I was a kid.
We're always complaining.
Of course.
But a guy who never complains is Brian Lambert. Brian, welcome to Flashback Twin Cities for second appearance on Flashback Twin Cities here.
Do I get a silver medal?
You get a silver medal.
We give you a high five.
Yeah, high five. Okay. Well, actually, we're not touching hands today.
That's right. A little cold, sorry.
A little cold. Well, I can't imagine why. I mean, you were on a plane a couple weeks ago in a big metal tube for 4 hours. How could you pick up
any germs? How could you not pick up microbes and germs? Yeah.
You've been doing a little tour of the country here. You went to Milwaukee, which is...
beautiful city in the winter.
That's
beautiful
right.
City of Milwaukee. Yeah.
It is Gotham City, actually, when you drive through Milwaukee downtown and you see industry and smoke. And hey, I love to our friends in Milwaukee, but you know, they don't have quite that Emerald City of skyline that we have here.
No. And the collection of strewn beer cans and bottles in packed into the snowdrift, you know, kind of looks like one of those ice cream treats, with the sprinkles.
Oh, sure, right.
Sticking out. It makes it look magical in the glint of the lamps.
Just the right light.
So what breweries are still in Milwaukee? What breweries are still existent in Milwaukee?
Well, I still got Miller, of course. And I couldn't tell you now if Miller is now owned by some giant Saudi conglomerate or what. But
aren't they owned by
there.
A German company now? Isn't Delve our American
InBev.
That's right.
It's the Budweiser people, yes.
That's right.
And part of the story, I was down there working on a story, and part of it is that the big American beer, the standard brands, having kind of a tough time. The craft beer thing is taking a big chunk out of their bottom line.
Plus, your hipsters—they don't—they don't want to be caught. No. They'll drink a PBR because it's ironic, but they don't want to. They're not going to drink a.
Well, and then this is an interesting thing I hadn't thought of before. It was a story of a local guy who's started this Two Gingers whiskey. Mm-hmm. And, I know nothing about them.
He owns a local.
Liquors. He did, right. Yeah. And
it's good stuff.
Yeah. And, here's the thing is that the theory is that all the hipsters, like yourself, Tom,
right.
And Tom, both you two guys,
super hip,
who are really supporting this craft beer thing, have developed a taste for, different, kind of challenging types of beer. Mm-hmm. Now, as they get just a little bit older, and of course you guys are not getting a little bit older, now they have a taste for whiskey, the brown liquors, as the brown stuff, as the liquor guys call it, and that's starting this kind of artisanal distillery business going.
Well, also the local ordinances here are making it easier now for these craft breweries. It's been a kind of a fight to be able to not
jobs,
only,
jobs, jobs.
The three letter word. What did Joe Biden call it? The four letter word, the three letter word, jobs.
Well, you got me curious. Is that only in the Midwest where it's taken a large chunk out? Because I know I have a friend who's a brewmaster down in New Orleans, and there's only three craft brewing companies in the entire area.
Really?
That's it. It's almost
traditional town, New Orleans, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. No, apparently it's. We're actually kind of late to the game. I mean, there are, of course, the more hipster than thou cities like Frisco and Seattle and Brooklyn and all that stuff, So, but apparently it's a nationwide deal. And the numbers for Bud Light, and all this kind of stuff, Coors, the standard brands, those companies, of course, are buying up craft breweries.
Well, you had your thumb on this. Do you think that Minneapolis-St. Paul, they're going to relax some of the regulations that have prevented some of these craft breweries from being in existence?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of push for it. And, when the Surly thing went through with where they allowed them to have a pub, a brewery, and a restaurant on the premises, they said this would be 150 jobs. The discussion was over. That was it. All right.
The new mayor, Betsy Hodge, do you think that is she on board with this? You talk to her?
I don't know the woman.
Do you know her? Do you know her?
I do not know Betsy. I she could not be on board. I mean, I think her voting block is heavily hipster.
Well, I saw her lineup for her inaugural ball, and I was surprised of the companies that are downtown that I think that this mayoral candidate spoke out against during the campaign, and then at the inaugural ball,
right.
They want to be her buddy.
U.S. Bank?
That was one of them.
What's the one that has? What's the discount chains all over the place?
I'm aware of that one, but there's a few of them on that list. And again, our guest today, Brian Lambert, works for MinnPost. He writes the Daily Glean, which our audience clicks
twice
on
twice a day. I'm glad they click on it twice a day.
What time does the first one get? What time do you start looking through the magazines?
Well, as if they read it, they'll note that it was filed at like 5:45 a.m., which reflects well on me, I think. I, of course, have written it at 10 o'clock the previous night, and
my editor
gets up and makes sure it takes out all the funny stuff that I put in.
That's no better than the Star Tribune on your door. You're reading yesterday's news in the morning.
It's part of the craft. It's all Hollywood.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with Brian Lambert. He's a writer. Now, are you a writer or editor at MinnPost? What is the title?
I'm just a lowly scribe.
Okay, lowly scribe at MinnPost. Flash at Twin Cities here on KLBB Club 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osman, with my guest, Brian Lambert of MinnPost, a lowly scribe, as he himself described himself. I would give him a little more credit than that.
Semi-lowly.
Semi-lowly.
Yeah.
Brian was the entertainment editor at the Pioneer Press for how many years? 17 years?
I was a media columnist.
Media columnist,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
They didn't let me get anywhere near editing because they would have had a fundamentally different newspaper. And I was there 15 years, did the media column.
And watched a lot of TV. I watched a lot of fantastic TV. It's February, so I know you missed watching all the sweeps series.
And as if they go to TC Media now, they can see some of the classics of the February sweeps.
That is correct. That is correct. And there were some the things that and especially in the more contemporary years, some of the investigations that were done.
Stuff that every citizen of this fine law-abiding city needs to know, that they should live in fear of every night, Tom. And our local broadcasters were out there investing in it, getting to the bottom.
There are drunk people downtown.
Yes. Yeah, drunk people downtown. There are women who are having sex for money somewhere in the city at this moment. And occasionally the building inspectors don't do what they're supposed to.
One of my favorite ones, we'll call it the Fox affiliate in town. I remember they did a big expose on hockey players at the U of M were drinking. There was eight.
Knock me over with a feather.
This was a 5-part series, and it was in November. Right. And the fuzzy camera of the they were in the jersey, walking into the bar.
They fuzzed out the faces and the label on the beer can.
Yeah, fuzzed the face. Yeah, can't advertise. We were talking a little bit off the air. There's lots of topics to talk about today, but one I think is of great national concern is who hosts the Tonight Show from year to year. This has been a big controversy for 20 years, and Jay Leno, whether you like him or don't like him, and I think it's a very polarizing topic in the media, but he was number one. You can't take that away from him. He was number one, and he was one of NBC's few number one commodities.
Since Seinfeld left, yes.
Replaced him with Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, a younger, hipper crowd. But the question I think that I have is a demographic they're chasing that's not going to be there? You have your kind of middle America, which Jay Leno seems to be able to speak to. You're bringing in Jimmy Fallon. He's a little bit edgier. He's a little bit quirkier, a little bit more cerebral. Is this going to be the same thing as Conan a few years ago, where it's a little bit too out there for that time of night? People that are watching the news, people that are actually still TV watchers, because the demographic they're going for isn't watching broadcast TV.
We watch YouTube. We go find the highlights from that episode and watch it through there. So I'm concerned, too.
What's your take on
this? Well, I think if they want to parallel anything, it's Saturday Night Live. They want a show through the week that is at least comparable, if not an echo, of the attitudes of Saturday Night Live, which is still a strong performer for NBC.
Surprising.
And that demographic, is different than Jay Leno's. It's younger. It's more urban. And I think that's what they want. The Jay Leno appeal really was, as you say, in middle America. Folks that probably have never been to New York City and certainly don't have any connection to hipsters like you two guys. And
you're killing me, man.
But Jay was, Jay was always an odd character. I mean, he was number one, but I think there was a line the other day that said he was the guy that we knew for 22 years without really knowing him or knowing who he is. And he was such a kind of a carnival barker personality. You never knew what is really going on with this guy. Where's he from? I mean, you get with Dave Letterman, you've had a few moments of insight into who Dave is, how Dave screws up, the mess he makes from time to time of his life and stuff. With Jay, you never had that. Jay was always a performer. And
but don't you think that's the same way with Johnny Carson? I mean, Johnny Carson.
Absolutely, has moved on.
It has moved on, but I think that different like Leno, and again, half people I know disagree this greatly between Letterman and Leno. Leno is not there to. It wasn't about politics, and same thing with Johnny Carson. Johnny Carson didn't get political. He would rip on both sides, but he was there to make someone comfortable, and I think that's what Jay Leno kind of took that model. He didn't change the Tonight Show. One of the critics I read was that Jay Leno, as a younger guy, younger generation, he didn't change the Tonight Show. He just kind of just went, had the same desk and couch, show. Yeah. Letterman tries to make people uncomfortable. He tries to get his thoughts known. He wants his opinions known.
He is the fellow that will come out and ask the question you didn't want to be asked.
But that is part of his appeal. I mean, I think that's also what gave him you know, I mean, among the, when we were all TV critics, these guys, you know, come out, they try to do a little schmooze. It was painful to get, you know, Letterman to do anything like that. I mean, he was above it, didn't want to do it. Jay periodically would show up, hang around the cocktail thing and work the crowd, but always as a performer. It was always Jay shtick. That's what you're having even in real life, which is kind of why I say, you know, what that's what research showed as well. But, you know, Letterman had greater credibility with the press and the media because he would ask a tough, almost journalistic question of, you know, some nitwit actress coming out who's just out of rehab for the 15th time. I mean, people in the audience saying, my God, how is this person even walking, standing up? How come she's not wearing a, you know, ankle bracelet? And he would say, hey, how come you're not wearing an ankle bracelet? You're such a hot mess. And people like that. Jay, of course, would never quite go that far. And the political thing, yeah, I mean, anybody, any public figure, they're fair for ripping and having fun with them. Anybody who's in political life or public life has got to know that. So.
Did you ever interview Jay?
Yes.
And how was that?
You know, he was perfectly fine. He was pro. But, I mean, it wasn't like you were going to find out something new about him at any point.
He likes cars and the Tonight Show.
That's yeah, and I like cars. So we chatted for, I think I had about a half hour with him. So we spent 20 minutes talking about cars. My, you know, 78 you know, classic Datsun and his vintage Maserati.
Well, you know. And, hey, now he might be able to spend some money. I mean, he didn't spend $1 at Tonight Show earnings, allegedly. Allegedly, yeah, he's banked all that, and he's still doing
stand-up. You know, anything anybody knows about him, it's just he and the wife, Mavis, and they're just, I mean, there's no scandal, there's no, but I think, I mean, what you said about him not changing Tonight Show is fundamentally true, and I think that may be part of his downfall, is that they need that show to change, and Jimmy Fallon's, I mean, his willingness to do skits, which is kind of why I make the relation to Saturday Night Live, is a big part of the reason they're doing this.
And I didn't like him on SNL, Jimmy Fallon. I thought he was too muggy. I thought he was trying to be.
You're very tough.
I'm very tough. Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, look at the car we're in here. But when someone laughs at themselves, it drives me nuts. Yeah. Jimmy Fallon used to laugh at himself.
There are definitely moments where it can make something so much better, but when it's every single time, yeah.
So I had issues watching him on late night. I thought this is. Not right for me, but yeah. I hate to admit it. I thought it was pretty funny, and I'm actually looking forward to seeing him on the Tonight Show. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't watch the Tonight Show at 10:30. I watch highlights or clips.
The highlights,
of it,
right?
The
yeah.
day after. Right. Oh, this is a good show. You got to come back and watch it. I'm not. Ever...
I'm with you too. I don't. I'm about 75 years older than you two hipsters, and that is the way I consume these guys too. It's just like, was there a great bit? I get a flash from it on some site I'm on, dial it in, and you watch 3 minutes. I can't tell you the last time I watched an entire episode of The Tonight Show. It just doesn't happen anymore.
So this question is that SNL audience going to be able to find 5 nights of The Tonight Show? I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be another.
I don't think they're tuning in.
I think Letterman.
What we just said, they're not going to tune in for 90 minutes.
Letterman's going to.
Is that 90 minute show or is that an hour?
I think it's 60 minutes now.
60, all right.
Commander's show being 90 minutes now.
Right. With 38 minutes of actual programming and 22
38, more like 28. Brian Lambert writes for MinnPost, and one of the few of the stories I followed on the Glean, because I go on the Glean every day.
Yes.
get my sample of stories. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lawsuit against this whole stadium thing, and the stadium thing has been so. What year was the state founded in? And we've had a stadium
1858.
Issue, and so we had a stadium issue since 1859 every year.
Which is, I mean, that's because Sid Hartman, who was still working in 1858, has been flogging a new stadium ever since then.
It's all Sid.
All Sid.
All Sid all the time. I have a clip here. I'm going to play this clip here, Tom. And this is from 1979. And this is a story you might remember, and then you might think this is from last week.
Hmm. The stadium bond issue goes on and on and on. 7,700 signatures needed on a petition to force a vote by the Minneapolis residents on a charter amendment, a vote which could overturn action of the Minneapolis Council in adopting the lodging and liquor taxes to pay off the stadium bonds and then, of course, possibly kill the stadium. Today, State Senator Jack Davies appeared at the Minneapolis City Clerk's office with petitions containing 4,600 signatures, far more than he needs. Davies originally filed petitions October 4th, but fell short by 1,700 names. The names on today's petition are now being checked. If 37% of them are acceptable, a special election will have to be called within 90 days. In Elk River...
That sounds so
timeless.
Familiar.
Timeless.
How did in the state, how was three people able to block the stadium proceeding through this lawsuit? That's what
this
I'm
this one or the new one?
The new one. Oh. This is from, just in case.
Now, you're the one you're talking about, this one that was just thrown out.
Correct.
Well,
there's two lawsuits. One was for the Wells Fargo tower that we were going to put in, and the second one was for the actual legality of the stadium.
Of how it was financed, the city and what they had,
And we are...
They didn't block it for long, though.
Well, we're 2 years into this now, and at the last minute before the bonds were being sold, this lawsuit went, and I'm trying to figure out... And we can both take – everyone here can take contrary positions on the stadium. It did – it happened. The one thing the Republicans and Democrats were able to get to agree on, it happened.
Cave into the NFL. It's a bipartisan caving into the NFL.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second here. But how did three – we'll call them activists. One had a very questionable record of – he ran for office, you know, 15 times.
Right.
And he didn't really have a
– they had no money. The line I liked, like I say, they put it up. It momentarily stalled the sale of the bonds, and then it was quickly slapped down. But he had the option to keep it going if he would put up another $500. He didn't either didn't have $500, or he couldn't see the point of wasting $500. So that was the end of that.
Oh, I was surprised because there are so many groups out there right now that are organizing. I see it on Facebook or I see it online that, you know, Citizens Against Stadiums and boo the stadium.
Yeah,
I'm surprised they didn't fund it. I thought someone would give them $500.
Well, you know, I mean, I think everybody knows that it's fait accompli and that there's no way you're going to fight, that all the powers that be in this state are on board with the thing. You know, it was interesting. One of at one point in this is that they turned it over to a couple of major corporate leaders, Richard Davis and Doug Baker from Ecolab, and they were going to kind of lead the charge to get other corporate heroes on board with this thing. And I had the good fortune to talk to these two guys later. I was struck by the fact that neither of them seemed to know that the NFL owners stood to make significantly more money if there was an entirely new franchise dropped into Los Angeles as opposed to moving the Vikings to Los Angeles. And by significantly, I mean by a factor of three or four times as much money. So the move to L.A. was always struck me as just a bogus thing.
But, Brian, Ziggy's plane was in L.A. The week this was 2 years ago, this was shot down, and then Ziggy's plane was – remember, that was a tweet. The picture
at a regional airport. We didn't even fly to LAX. It was out in Burbank or someplace.
He went to go see Leno that night. I'm just surprised that
– I wish I could say I was.
Well, I'm surprised that – This whole operation of the state was able to be almost be blocked by one lawsuit. And I guess the second thing I'm surprised about is how many things that our governors are still discovering about this law. We talk about the healthcare law, and we laugh about, you know, not reading the bill and who did and who didn't. This stadium bill, which our governor championed, he seems to find some new things in this law. And he also discovered Google because he found out that Ziggy Wolf was being sued by someone out in New Jersey.
I was horrified to realize that I knew about the Ziggy Wolf lawsuit in Jersey before the other one. In fairness to Ziggy, I think it is worth pointing out, I think it was Lee Schaefer in the Star Tribune, had a good story about the people that Ziggy's suing. Mm-hmm. Not exactly defenseless folks.
Oh, of course not.
I mean, it's still kind of a scummy deal, but, you know, it's not like he's picking on some impoverished little old lady here.
Well, no, I think it's fair to say that. I think that anyone who made a lot of money, you didn't make a lot of money by always being the good guy. I mean, there's going to be someone along the way that you rubbed off the wrong way.
Right.
And
the one thing about Wolf, you know,
he's driven.
He is very focused. This guy knows exactly what he's doing. He's a developer. That's what this whole thing's always been about.
You spent some time with him.
You know, and he wasn't entirely unlikable. He does have a sense of humor, but it is all business. I mean, he has a focus on this that is like a laser, and which is why, you know, in conjunction with the might of the NFL, all the money, and the weird emotional attachment that people have to pro football, the local folks didn't have a chance in trying to negotiate a fairer deal.
How much does a seat license cost now? So if you're a season ticket holder, that's about...
You guys got yours, right? Huh? Where are you sitting, 50-yard line?
Well, as a hipster, you know, obviously I don't have my...
Aren't they bringing you down your artisanal beers?
We're in the
quarter.
I'm going to actually draw a little mustache on my finger here. Hold it up.
It's what, but 15 grand for your license, then it's what, 5 grand for your ticket? Is that how it works?
What is, I just don't understand. I don't get it.
Do you know,
especially for a game that is set up for television. You know, when you're actually at a pro football game, they're standing around for all. What's going on? Oh, we're at a commercial right now.
You live in kind of an upper crust neighborhood. Do you know anyone that has season tickets to this organization?
No.
Yeah, well, I don't know anyone either.
Yeah, I'm sure there's somebody in the neighborhood. I mean, there are a couple of football maniacs, but as far as I can tell, they watch every game on television.
The only folks I know of who go there currently are people who get it through their companies. Company tickets handed out.
Yeah. I mean, which is the corporate box thing. I mean, that's what that's all about, is getting more of that money.
With
tax deductions. American taxpayers subsidizing it.
Well, the NFL is a non-profit. This is a fundraiser.
Unbelievable.
The 70-inch TV in HD in the comfort of your living room.
Yeah.
Or drive out to downtown Minneapolis, park.
Through the drunken mob.
Mm-hmm. The drunken purple mob, because everyone's painted and screaming at you.
Yeah.
Well, didn't you have a great story? Didn't you get pummeled by a purple drunk people eater?
A guy from North Dakota wearing the horns, and he comes up. He is bombed before kickoff.
Perfect.
Staggering up the thing. And he's at one point, he's ordered 4 more beers because they're going to cut him off at somewhere in the third quarter. And some woman, she's the only one, there's a bunch of guys, has got the courage to say to him, "You are offensive. We are season ticket holders. You know, you're going to stop it. I'm going to report you." And of course, he turns around then with a full mug of beer and sprays everybody as he sloshes up.
Didn't you get blamed for that, though?
She goes down, gets an aged usher. The guy was 111 years old. And he had to climb up to the top of the second deck, and he's just about dead by the time he gets there. And we're all, you know, all of us men, who are too, this guy's big, the drunk guy's big, we're terrified. The woman was the only one who had any courage to actually do anything. The old guy, you know, just gasping for breath, shakes his knobby finger at me and says, "You have got to settle down."
That's right.
And I'm pointing to the guy next to me, the large drunk guy with the horns on, man.
You know,
he's your problem.
Thank God this wasn't the digital age. We'd be tweeting that. You know, columnist Brian Lambert, cited for drunken brawl at the Metrodome. What are we going to complain about next? Because now we've been talking about the Twins going to, they're going to North Carolina at one point in the mid-90s. We didn't build the stadium. The Wild, they have a stadium now. The Wolves are going to get
refurbished.
The Mayo patch now, right? The Mayo patch and Block E, and then they're going to have the Target Center is going to be refreshed. Which team now next is going to need a stadium, and which
the Swarm? I think we got to kind of get behind the Swarm. And you forgot the Saints' new stadium downtown St. Paul.
Is that a done deal now? That's happening.
Oh,
right?
They're cleaning the ground. That actually could be nice. And apparently they're going to use that one for 180. There's lots of, you know, high schools and other stuff to use it. I don't have any objection with that.
I'm genuinely excited for that one as well.
This is all the Saints, the Green Bay Packers, and the Saints here at KLEB.
What are you saying?
We are the home of the St.
Paul
Saints.
Oh, you got the Packers on here?
We do.
Wow.
And our Packers fans, this audience, are very low-key, very calm.
You know, I mean, I'm such a fair-weather Vikings fan. As soon as they start losing again, as they do every season, just turn on the Packers.
So you watch one game a year, right?
I actually watched way too much football this year.
Really?
Way too much. Really? I was ashamed of how much I watched.
And you're not a football guy. You're a baseball guy. You're not a football guy.
I like baseball, but, you know, Peyton Manning had such a great year, and all the Broncos games were on, and then, of course, the horrible Super Bowl.
Not a football guy,
but I was ashamed of how much football I watched this year. I really got to find a life.
So. TV, right?
Television, right?
Tom, let's take a break. We'll come back, and I want to talk a little bit more stadium, because I just don't think we've discussed this issue enough in media, and then I have a couple more topics locally, and maybe we'll even play some more audio. So we'll be back on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB. My guest is Brian Lambert from MinPost. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond with my guest from MinPost.com, Brian Lambert. You can read Brian's take on local news in the Glean every morning at 5 a.m. and then again in the afternoon. But you can read it all day long. You can
goes away. It's the internet. It's always there.
So every comment you write.
Every period, every semicolon.
You get a good followers of comments, too. There are a couple of characters I haven't seen in a while, but I love on these web pages. And you used to write for the Same Rowdy Crowd.
Yeah.
And these commentator,
the troll,
we'll call them the trolls. some of them may not think they're trolls, but they have these they develop these personas that are online only, and they follow Brian around like his entourage or his groupies. They love
which
to,
one's Turtle?
They love yeah, that's right. They love to tweak you. I'd love to.
Is know, that what you call it? Tweaking.
Yeah, tweaking. Right.
They're calling me foul names, Tom.
I haven't seen those. You know, do you ever worry that people might get a little bit too enraged sometimes online? I see the two fingers slamming the keyboard in all caps and
caps lock thing.
Caps
yeah,
lock, right?
Goes
yeah.
On. Yeah, yeah. Well, MinnPost moderates the stuff, you know. So they when they get really foul, which is why I think we've lost a couple of our regular contributors. And you know, there was you know, language was not suitable for Thanksgiving dinner was used, and they were gone. But, you know, on an ordinary blog or something, God knows what these people will say.
You know, I always, it's like the old Steve Cannon thing. If these callers are so good, get their own show. And it's
a blog. It's free.
Exactly.
Just set it up.
Yeah.
They give it away.
These
yeah.
commentators, there's some commentators, I read them in posts pretty regularly, that you have a story up there, and within a minute,
yeah.
there is like a five-page.
What do they do all day?
It's actually as long as the column that was written is up there. And sometimes, even though I may disagree with some of the comments on there, they're not unthoughtful. They have links and they have some facts to it. But it's like you have all this talent. You need to be doing something different than commentating on MinnPost.
Yeah, and some of them do have their own blogs and stuff. And but then it becomes a question of how much time do you have with social media or anything else a day? Screen time are you putting in per day? And that's kind of what amazes me. To kind of jump ahead of the conversation, there was a stat the other day that the modern, again, the hipsters like yourselves, you know, 10 hours a day interacting with a screen of some sort, a cell phone, a television.
At least. Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Amazing. I mean, we used to be appalled when it was like 4 hours a day, kids watching all these, you know, commercials and, you know, cops and robbers shows and stuff.
I was talking to a friend last night, and we had a little discussion. Kids are now, I see like a 3-year-old, okay, they pick up a phone, and they're more adept at picking up that phone than even me, and I'm a, you know, tech junkie, I admit it. But you see a little 3-year-old, they pick it up, they're not messing it up, they're not screwing it up, they know what they're doing. They pick up an app, they
play
a game.
Swipe.
That's right.
But the thing is, for those kids, they're going to need to know how to be able to do exactly that for their future lives.
Yeah. Well, but my comment, though, is, and it's hypocritical because I spent a lot great deal of my time trying to get people to watch my videos online. Are we losing the fundamentals of being able to roll a ball back and forth and get along and be able to be disciplined when you go, let's say, to some kind of class, whether it be karate or some kind of disciplinary structure, that you aren't clicking on something, you aren't controlling it, there's not flashing lights, it's not, you actually have to like talk to someone without pulling out a phone or pulling out some device.
Can you imagine having a kid trying to watch Mr. Rogers? It wouldn't work. Not a chance anymore.
Not if they've already seen the internet, no. Well, you know, I think there's a woman who's got a book out now called Detached or something like that. And you know, her point was that you don't have the depth of emotional response with this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, all these studies that show that people who are compulsive about Facebook feel depressed. I mean, they're reading the stuff about how exciting and wonderful everybody else's life is and things like that. And but her theory, as best I can understand, was that, you know, when you don't have that interaction, the human thing, you're not getting all the facets of it to get the true feeling of what is going on with the other person and what your appropriate response should be. And so she's worried that that's what, I don't know if there's any truth to that, but I mean, it was kind of an interesting argument.
Well, it's made it very easy for, you know, Facebook, Twitter, to be able to reinvent yourself into a different, to what you want people to think you are.
Yeah, which is a lot of the part of this commenting thing you were talking about, trolling.
Right.
You become a completely different person. You're authoritative, by God. You are righteous in condemning the panty waist liberals are out there or whatever else.
I knew that was coming. But it's in high school, you go to high school, and you didn't have a chance to reinvent yourself. You didn't have a chance unless you got some plastic surgery, which no one where I went through did. You carry with you this persona you developed in elementary school all the way through 12th grade until you go to college and no one knows who you are. But in the internet, if you want to be an intellectual or if you want to be, you know, you become what you want to be.
Right.
You post the pictures. I take 100 pictures. I find the three best ones that I find.
And like, look at my, this is my a quarter turn of the little light from above. Exactly.
The right lighting, the right, I don't look too bad in the right lighting. Okay.
And the Photoshop, you know.
Oh, yeah, I enhance it. You know, no blemishes. Right.
Yeah. I look like, you know, a downhill skier.
That's right. In your industry, as a journalist, call me a hipster, you're a journalist here. Mm-hmm. Online, is this the way it's going to go? What's going to happen to these dead trees that are being delivered?
They'll be gone completely.
Do you have dead trees still?
It still comes to the house, mainly for the crossword puzzle. My wife tears it apart, reads a crossword puzzle. I mean, there are days that will go by, I will never touch the paper. I mean, it's all online.
Right? And a lot of your former colleagues are at MinnPost. Do you get a little bit of, because it's, and MinnPost is free. So do you get a little bit of flack sometimes from your former colleagues that you're selling out to providing free content online and not, you know, not sticking with the paid, you know, magazine, newspaper?
No. Okay. No. I think they all realize that they're just, I mean, most of them are just hoping that they can ride it out to till they get to retirement age before the thing collapses. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, cable television right now, the local newspapers. If you took away sports, local sports, they'd implode. I mean, that is really what props these things up now, is that's the demand to have something like that, which even then kind of baffles me because, you know, why can't you just pick this up? You know, I mean, if it's high school and college stuff, you could pick, there are ways to pick it up. Other than a paper version. But.
So in your estimation, pretty much the old guard of newspaper writers is completely aware of what's going to happen.
Oh, absolutely.
They're not resistant.
They're fools if they don't.
Sure.
You know? And which there are some fools that are still writing. I mean, I don't want to, you know, gloss over that.
Sure, sure.
But, yeah, they know that this thing is going to change forever and be gone. I mean, the paper, it just doesn't make any sense that it would continue on. I mean, there are all sorts of products, physical products, that are, you know, the flexible screens that you could have essentially the same, you know, kind of tactile interaction with that you have now with newspapers, only full color and interactive and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, and, you know, for the conglomerates that run or own these newspapers, you know, all these trucks and all that stuff, that's expensive. That's overhead that they just as soon get rid of as fast as possible.
The Star Tribune's now printing the Pioneer Press now. That was kind of a major thing happened this year. That now we have, we used to have four papers in town. We have two right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have one.
You have one and a half.
Right? One, yeah, one printing. That's right. The half was one you might have
yeah,
done
pretty
well.
Yeah, I used to be associated with the half.
Yeah, well.
It was about a three quarters when I was there.
And sports, they still send those guys out to travel. They still send them to these games.
I was going to check. I hadn't seen it. I mean, did the Pioneer Press send somebody to Russia? They must. I mean, this is a big deal. But
well, is there a Care 11 crew out in Russia right now?
One of their guys
is
in Russia.
Who's paying for that, Gannett or NBC, do you think?
I would be surprised if Gannett didn't help kick in for that because there's so many Minnesotans, you know, in part of the deal.
Been watching the Olympics?
A little bit. Not as much as I have in the past.
I couldn't watch Bob Costas after his eye started.
Yeah, that was bad. Yeah, but I mean, the only events I really like, you know, the downhill skiing and stuff. You know, of course,
not the triathlon or the what's
biathlon or the gun thing. Right. I don't get it. I think they should have sports, the Olympic sports, on based on activities that have been proven useful over time. I mean, lifting stuff, running fast. Those are you know bona fide events.
Like the ESPN,
the snowboarding half tube. When have we needed this in human history before?
You haven't? what kind of life do you live?
What's that ESPN show? When you see it, I see this when I'm like at a sports bar at lunch sometime, and you watch the TV muted, and there's guys carrying like big barrels of beer, you know, and
yeah.
You know, that event.
Now that is something since medieval times.
It's
large,
useful.
Large, hairy guys have carried giant kegs of beer. So that has a tradition to it.
We could, go to Milwaukee next time. I bet you can find some guys.
Several of them were walking down, downtown Milwaukee.
Recruit them.
Does curling make it into this list? I got to know. You got to sweep.
Yeah, I guess it's a sweeping thing. That is one of the goofier sports.
Another topic that was covered.
Why do they have men's and women's? What's the difference?
I am going to keep my mouth shut.
Thank you.
Yeah.
This is a family show.
I mean, it's like, no, but I mean, it's like, you could, both could be involved. I mean, what? There's nothing that requires, you're just sweeping and pushing, and I don't know.
What can I tell you?
What can I tell you?
The Minnesota Orchestra, this has been a topic that has been a major part of the Glean all year. Yeah. I went last night to the new Orchestra Hall. Fantastic.
So I got to go down.
Saw the Minnesota Orchestra perform Planets. What's your take on
Gustav Holst?
Exactly. Yeah. What's your take? What's your take on this last year and a half of?
Well, you know,
is the board
to
blame for all this?
The board didn't help. I mean, it's negotiating was really pretty clumsy. I think there's probably a case that the Minnesota Orchestra, which is one of the better paid of the national orchestras of national rank. You know, probably is no longer in a position where it can sustain the salaries that it was paying. But, you know, I have a basic sympathy for the people, the players. I mean, they are at the top of their profession. Mm-hmm. There, God knows, there are enough other professions where they use far less talent is involved and get paid far more. But, you know, the argument that the market simply couldn't support that has some validity. But they, it was ham-fisted. It was all this... brutish threatening to cut it off. And so I think that the Vanska, if he's going to come back, his ultimatum that the president go, I think is going to have to be met. And that guy will have to, it's just formality. I mean, he's replaceable.
Well, they don't last very long anyway. I mean, the average term is 3 years for a board chair.
Well, he's going to have to make it. It's a symbolic deal. And, I mean, Osmo is far more important than the president of this thing.
Do you think he'll come back?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah.
The last week, the topic was, and I read this in a couple of different sources, that, and I saw it last night, there's some chanting going on, and of, fire.
At the event? At
that
the
was
concert?
That was last week. They're carrying on the green, it's like Homer hankies, pulling out a green hanky and blowing it around.
Yeah.
I thought, we can do better than that. We're better than that. I understand the politics of this, but you're going
See, Tom, you don't like that kind of in-your-face moments. Huh? I think that sometimes that kind of insurgent activity is a good thing.
Yeah, outside. But I was
when they haven't paid their money.
I was in my I had paid tickets with my best clothes last night.
God!
Listen, I didn't go to
you
see
got the tux brushed out and everything.
The tux brushed out, the tuxedo, right? Yeah. As Steve Martin called it. Our guest today, Brian Lambert of MinPost, MinPost.com every day, Monday through Friday.
Twice a day.
And do you have anything else coming up in one of the local magazines? Anything else we can expect to see from
Brian? Well, there's going to be this story about this Kieran Folliard guy who ran the local and stuff, and now his two gingers I mentioned earlier in the show here. I don't know when that's going to be out. You know, these magazines go, it's like, you write it in February and they run it in November. But we are talking at MinPost about resuming a media column. In which, to some degree, the discussion will be to which degree will I be able to torment managers.
You get a little joy out of that. You get a little joy out of the torment.
No one else does it. This is not PR. This is journalism.
How many times were you told at your former position, can you tone it down a little bit on tearing into
The way it works is that you don't actually have that conversation. You just pick up the paper the next day and realize that it has been toned down, But that's kind of what we got to talk about at the MinPost.
Well, there's not much left to torment because there's only a few different companies around.
I don't know. There's some stuff that the other day, for example, I won't mention the name of the station but there's a local television station of prominence. Everybody would recognize it. And the two lead characters are off on some kind of vacation. They're running around Lake Country. It's the middle of winter. They're over in somewhere. And one of their news stories is a story on a local guy who does a great job of fixing outboard motors, snowmobiles, and stuff. That's the story. This guy does a great job, fixing. That is called a commercial. And it goes on for 2 minutes. There's nothing in this thing other than this guy does a great job fixing snowmobile motors and outboard motors.
Wow, that station cares. When you watch this stuff, you realize how good life is because all other problems in this town have been solved now because we're now on to the snowmobile, fixing the snowmobiles.
Right. And just PR stuff. And, there's plenty left to torment.
Do you even watch local news anymore? Do you watch?
I have faded away from it largely. I have an offspring who's working in the industry.
That's right.
And who, you know, it's a supreme act of rebellion that he would do that.
I think it's great, the station he works for. I'm not going to say which one, but I think it's fantastic, the organization he works for, because down the road there's a president of news that I think that – I think it's perfect that he takes his orders from.
Excuse me. Don't make me laugh, Tom.
And he carries around that bag with that logo on it.
Yeah, that's right.
But in broadcast TV, we're talking out there about just how people are going to watch, you know, consume news, consume what was normally on trees or from trees. Do you even watch any broadcast? You know, the Michael J. Fox show got canceled.
No.
I think the Robin Williams show.
It did?
Show.
Really?
It got canceled.
Wow.
I think the Robin Williams show is next to be canceled.
No, don't watch any of that stuff. Everything that I watch is at very least cable. We're binge watching the new second season of House of Cards, but all that stuff is so much better. You know, I was kind of a latecomer to The Wire, mm-hmm. often considered one of the greatest TV shows, series ever put together. And of course, you realize you watch that, and you realize that kind of black patois, the city dialogue of inner city blacks, never appeared anywhere on network television. I mean, they were all basically just sort of, they were L.A. hipster actors, studly guys. They kind of scuffed them up a little bit to be the villains of the piece at most.
Made them grow a 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah. Okay, now you're a villain. Now you're a gangbanger. Like, you know. But, you know, so Game of Thrones and Breaking Bad, of course, which I think is the best thing that's ever been done. I mean, this is the stuff you watch. It's so much. You know, you hate to say something like Game of Thrones is real, but, you know, it's just so much more vivid and engrossing.
You know, HBO, I think HBO and Netflix, they've got to really figure out how people watch TV now. And Netflix, I think, is doing what HBO did, you know, 20, 30 years ago by putting on programming that would never make it in your traditional.
And now Amazon.
Or Amazon.
And
you know, it's and it's catching on. I mean, House of Cards, it's on Netflix, right? That's not even on any.
All downloaded at once. The entire season available at once.
Yeah. And they're making money. Netflix, I think they offered themselves to Blockbuster 10 years ago for $2 million, and they turned it down, and now look at where Blockbuster is.
And you know, they made fundamental mistakes. You remember the price increase thing? That was 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, and everyone.
Yeah, talk about rebounding.
Everyone yelled and booed, but
yeah,
it's still there.
Like they had shot themselves in the foot. But.
And you're a Netflix subscriber, correct? You get Netflix, right, on your Apple TV?
Well, it comes through Apple TV, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a bad device that someone might have recommended you getting there a while back. Right?
Tom, at our house, we owe it all to you. I mean, if it wasn't for you, we would still be stuck in the age of crummy Dell computers. Tom stepped in, and we've become an Apple orchard.
I just like things that work.
And they do work, and they have the best customer service. And that's what I love about them. Is I got a problem, you call them up. They're there on the phone in a split second, and the problem's solved.
There's someone in the family bought a Dell computer against my instructions.
Yes,
and sure enough, didn't work after
didn't
a while.
Work.
So
no, Tom, so you're right. How much?
But here's a challenge. I had to come into it, and I don't get defeated easily with technology.
No,
as you know,
persistent.
And I usually win. Yeah. But I had to talk to Dell customer service.
Oh.
And there's nothing domestic about Dell customer service now. It's all overseas. And I'm not trying to go this road here, but it's not an easy.
If they have a hard time pronouncing Minnesota, you know you got a problem.
Yeah. Best line from Slumdog Millionaire is, you know, where are you from? I'm from where you are. I'm from Milwaukee, because he looked at the poster of where he's from. No, and it was literally like a 4 or 5 day activity calling back and forth and trying to get. Because there's no names. You just go, and then when you call back after you get disconnected, you've got to hit the prompts, and then an hour later you get someone. They're trying to get you so frustrated you just hang up and never call them back again.
Right. I'm going through that now with LG Electronics, trying to get something repaired. It's terrible. I mean, customer service is one of the big the coming waves. If everybody can do it as well as Apple, they'll have happier, long lasting customers. You want to hold somebody from the time they're 18 till they're 58. Customer service.
Minpost.com. Brian Lambert writes The Glean. What's on tap next week? What's on your mind next week for The Glean?
I always love a good fraud. I hope Tom Petters makes another appeal, I'm sure.
And Denny's probably being moved from their prison.
Denny Ecker's going to get moved. There's always something good.
Hey, we're going to see you on February 27th at Newsapalooza. So,
yes,
Brian,
I will
be part
look
of
forward
our...
to it. I urge everyone else to come too.
Thank you, Brian. This is Flashback Twin Cities. We'll be back next Saturday, same time, here on KLBB Club 1220. Till then, so long.